I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
What's up? I'm Laura Correnti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome to our second episode of Adlandia. And if you didn't hear our first episode, Trumping Your Values, subscribe today. We had great guests, Ben Cooley from Lenny Letter and Jake Horowitz from Mike. So this week on Adlandia, we have two ladies, Lindsay Slaby,
kick-ass consultant, and Melanie Altrescu, who went out on her own to do the same. And it's two women disrupting shit. Like, they are out there trying to change the game, whether it's from agency brand relationships to finding new
artists.
Creators and artists to, you know, forge relationships with brands and agencies to kind of bring new dimensions to the creative process.
So we're going to talk to them later.
Yeah.
But first,
one of the things we really wanted to dig into today is really talking about kind of this emergence of what we're calling the citizen in chief.
Yeah, we've been talking about this actually for a while. So it's really about, you know, normal citizens, normal people like you and me becoming the editor in chief, right? And giving a view or perspective on what's happening for news at large. And I think that's something that we're seeing. Like, you've got the traditional news outlets who are covering things, but then, like, and this is a question, right, Laura? I mean, we talk about this all the time. Is it more authentic or is it more arresting when you hear from someone who's on the ground at a specific event, and it doesn't have to be like a formal event, a town hall, or looking at something that's happening and saying, this is my perspective, this is where I'm coming from, you know, Michigan.
Sure.
Right? What if C-SPAN was a channel of the communities?
I mean,
what if senators actually went out and interviewed, right, some of their constituents, and that was broadcast on C-SPAN?
I mean, talk about everything old is new again. I mean, if Tim Armstrong from AOL is listening right now, if there's ever been a time for you to revive Patch, like, you should be listening.
I mean, what I think is really interesting, are you like, are there potentially new financial models, right, for small media companies that could pop up that are maybe citizen funded and citizen run?
I think that that's a totally interesting proposition. Is what is the NPR version of Citizens in Chief?
Yeah.
What does C-SPAN look like when constituents come to the table versus politicians?
Yeah. That's the point. And how can we microfund that stuff through the community itself? This is a wave and a tide that's coming. I think it's happening in general, like the people, the big body of the people, right?
Communities
are going to start popping up, right? And bolstering voices that they believe in, right? That maybe aren't deemed the voices by a national institution. Like a national news organization.
Right. And just to riff on that a little bit, because later in the show, we're obviously going to be talking about the role of consultants and this ability to have kind of these arbiters of connection, right? And going and identifying these creators, these artists who are essentially out in the world that brands wouldn't traditionally look for, and artists wouldn't traditionally look for brands, but the platform and the communities that these folks are galvanizing are completely changes the way we think about things like influencer marketing. And a lot of brands that you're starting to see are turning more, less away from, I would say, the influencer marketing piece and more towards this idea of maybe it's citizens and residents. It's these people who have perspectives that are experts or passionate about X topic that are now becoming voices. Not just for media companies, but for brands.
Maybe there's some kind of like a true, like maybe there's a whole nother citizen as
you want to. Oh my God.
Citizen as journalist, right?
Like, I have network, a real life case study for you.
Okay, go ahead.
So, because this is so cool. So, a couple of years ago, I actually was on the losing side of a pitch, which just doesn't happen often, but it happened this time. And
it's true.
The reason we lost is because we didn't do what you just said.
Bring in the real people.
We didn't bring in the voice.
Yeah.
We tried to reflect the voice.
Yep.
And what I mean by this is it was apparel company. And later down the line, I met one of the guys who was actually on the winning team. And I said, what did you do? How did you, so A, because I thought the CMO was brilliant. You could tell he was super passionate about his consumer.
Yeah.
And he said, I brought the consumer in the room.
Yep.
I said, oh, like you found people like in your agency that reflected what they were looking for? He was like, no, I went out to Harlem. I found, you know, X, oh, Y, and Z.
I love this guy. And I remember,
and he said, I found X, Y, and Z who were the consumer.
And I brought him in.
And instead of me shooting a video or writing down some, you know, key attributes that they were obsessed about, I just brought them in.
Yep.
I said, to the pitch? He said, yeah. And I think what you're getting to is that this idea of reflection and interpretation gets you nowhere near the emotional connection and conversation that people are having.
Okay, so that's number one, what we're obsessing over. Yeah. So, can you imagine our like long conversations at night? And number two, which actually totally goes along with how do you target, how do you source, right? Well, then how do you measure?
Right.
What are you measuring? Right.
Have I created a conversation? Have I taught you something new? Do you feel differently about this perspective? What are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it? I think here's one of the things
that brands leave on the table all the time. How can I help you now achieve that? So we serve it up. We lead the horse to water, but then we don't watch if they drink or not.
Yeah.
Or how do they want to drink it? Do they want a straw? I mean, honestly. You know, these are things definitely rock salt. But I think people are leaving, you know, some of the most important metrics on the table. Conversation and chemistry.
I like chemistry.
So we'll be right back with Lindsay Slaby and Melanie Atreescu. We'll have a really good conversation about the role of consulting in the industry. Welcome back, everybody, to Atlandia. We have two amazing women sitting with us, girl power, in the studio today. First, we have Lindsay Slaby, who is the co-founder of Sunday Dinner.
And Melanie Altarescu, who's an independent consultant for entrepreneurs and startups.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming down.
Thanks for coming. Lindsay, can you tell us a little bit about Sunday Dinner, how it came to be? You've told me some interesting things about it. Started actually in your apartment on Sundays over dinner.
Yeah.
Which just shows how straightforward you can be.
So I've worked in advertising for a long time, and I was head of production at a large agency, Droga 5. And my side gig was seeking out and getting to know a lot of interesting tech and creative talent. And I would open my doors on Sundays for the past 9 years.
But you're not Italian.
No.
So there weren't meatballs. It wasn't like Sunday.
No, but I would cook. I would cook for the most part. Everyone would come together and we'd find interesting ways of them collaborating and how to build their businesses. And I just always had been kind of this key curator of interesting people and getting them to work together on projects. And I did that in agency side and then wanted to leave and start to do that directly with brands. And the name Sunday Dinner just made sense because it really gets back to this place of bringing people together of how you want to start a project, how you want to kick off an engagement, and how you really want people to interact together.
That sounds like just a natural skill you have. Like,
yeah.
Right? Were you doing that in like kindergarten? You were like, hey, Bobby, Janie,
let's get together.
In common. Let's hang out. See you at lunch.
Yeah. I think people who are connectors, it is natural, but it's a skill. And it's actually interesting to
sometimes. Are you type A?
Yeah, super type A. But to get respected for that as a skill, I think is hard sometimes. A lot of people think they can either like make money or deals off putting people together, and they don't really realize there is such talent in really understanding curation and casting.
So were you weren't doing, I mean, it wasn't about financial gig or a side hustle for you. It was, I'm enjoying this.
I'm a networker.
Yeah, it's pure generous. It's this generosity, I think, of wanting to see people succeed and put them together. And what you get out of that is kind of this rush of their success and what you feel from that.
Yeah. So, Mel, speaking of side hustles, tell us a little bit about how you got into the independent world and kind of your network and how you're pursuing this on your end.
Yeah. So I was at Condé Nast for about 10 years with a brief stint at Hearst. And I was always on the integrated marketing side of the publishing industry. So helping to drive advertising revenue by coming up with creative ideas. And the main way that I found was most successful in that arena was by connecting the dots to the outside world. And so that's really where I started to grow my Rolodex and network of creative people. I would tap into all kinds of different networks and contacts to come up with really cool ideas that we would then sell to advertising partners. I loved it and ended up running big teams and working on major activations at magazines like Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, Wired, but ultimately had this urge to be part of the outside world that I was constantly charged with bringing into the magazine world. Mm-hmm. And so about a year and a half, I stepped out on my own and I've been working with a variety of clients, mostly in the brand partnership space, but also a little bit of talent development as well. And it's been really quite gratifying.
You both came from a more traditional world,
yeah,
right? And then totally went off on your own and decided to do something different. I mean, what was that decision? It sounds like it was natural. Like a natural, like, progression, was it?
My role at agencies over the past 5 years had been to be a change agent, which was to really try to push them out of their comfort zone and tap your network and bring interesting people in. But when you couldn't really get to the client, which there was a, you know, kind of a wall in front of you to have that conversation, you just were constantly shut down. And I think it was natural for me to realize I have this talent, I have this skill, I can bring these people together, and to just bypass what was getting in the way and go directly to the clients. And the reason I actually started off on my own was because a CMO who was a client of ours just said, you know, we want to work directly with you.
I feel that's like fascinating. You said something, the wall, which is something we talk about a lot now. But
it's a polite way of saying
that
it.
That is not a political
no,
reference.
But I think, but actually a lot of clients don't even, I mean, I was agency side at a point too. And like, I don't even think a lot of clients get exposure to some of the stuff that you're talking about. And the wall is actually internal. And that just happens.
And
right,
that's the point of the show too, by the way. It's like really to elevate these creatives and these makers and these creators who are out there doing this fantastic thing. But because they're not a part of this traditional institution or the way that this industry has functioned since the days of John Hamm and Mad Men, that means that it's this scary outside thing that we can't possibly adopt as the new process.
Well, it's like a weird process.
It's access where the process
gets in the way.
Yeah. You both have this, and I was saying to Alexa earlier, it's like this KPI of chemistry. And I've watched you both professionally and personally work a network faster than me, and I didn't think that was possible.
Thank you.
And that was a little bit of
There's always a compliment in her compliment for herself. Yeah, I'll take it.
And I meant that in the most respectful way.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But in all seriousness, I've seen you curate these amazing people that come from all walks of life, all different passion points. How the fuck do you create
and
that
And it makes
network?
Sense when you bring them together. Like, right. That's a big thing.
Well, my answer is twofold. Number one is when I'm doing it on behalf of a brand, it's really about understanding the story that the brand wants to tell. And that sounds obvious, but you have to actually care about that story. And so the project that we worked on recently was about disruption. And the idea that came up was to bring together people who were transforming industries and to call them the transformers.
Right.
And the way I did it was to think about the different areas that we might want to cover and who did I know in those areas. The reason why I know a lot of people in those different arenas is because I have an insatiable curiosity. I'm constantly, when I meet people, finding out what they're working on, what they care about.
And do you
just
go up to them? Because I just go up to them. She'll tell you, I'll just go up to them.
She'll.
Do you just, like, how do you go up to these people? You see them at events. Like, we're all at these same industry events. Mm-hmm. There's heavy hitters. Then there's, like, the unknowns that we all know are going to be the heavy hitters one day. Like, what's your relationship?
And
how do you know who to build into your network and who you're like, you know what, I'm better off spending my time here?
It's a little bit like the Muppet Show. Like, you really want
I love that.
You want
are we
an
the
amazing
chefs?
Yeah, totally. You're the fish throwing chefs. You really want a diverse cast of characters in your network, and you don't want to care about, you know, how successful they are at the moment, how they're dressed, who else they know in the room, that kind of a thing. It's about finding those quirky characters and entrepreneurs and creators and artists and, like, giving a shit about them.
Right.
You know, there was years ago at a Warby Parker event, this illustrator who was, it was a holiday party, and he was drawing your holiday wishes. And I stood online for a really long time. His illustrations were amazing. And he drew my holiday wish, which was to be on a beach. And he drew the beach with the word you. And his name is Jason Polin. And I followed him over the years. And he has really gained incredible momentum and significance in the art world. And I stayed in touch with him. And I cared about his work.
I feel this way about this guy, John Boy Tattoo, who does the most insane minimalist fine art tattoo. And now he's tattooing Haley Baldwin and Justin Bieber and all. And like 2 years ago, he was just a guy in West 4th Street.
Right.
Tattoo shop.
Whose work you liked.
Who I loved.
Yeah. It caught your eye.
Minimalist.
You have to have an eye, right?
And exactly. Or fine line drawing. Mm-hmm. And so what's fascinating about that is like, and I'm curious, it was like even on the agency side, do you find that people who are the early stages or the lesser known, but like there's something there that they're willing to have the conversation? Do people think that, what are they in this for? Like, how do you approach creating those connections and then cultivating them over time?
When someone catches my eye, when I like their work, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, illustration or an upcoming chef, it's about demonstrating your interest in their craft and really supporting them, whatever that means, you know, buying their book and telling them, following them on Instagram and commenting when they're doing something that piques your interest, et cetera. And the ones that grow and end up succeeding and bursting through that bubble, you already have a personal relationship with because you cared. So I think that that's really an integral part of it, is just caring about what people are doing genuinely.
And then you said there was a second part, which I think was like them bringing those people together and knowing how to create the conversation.
Yeah. So the first part is caring about the story the brand wants to tell so that you can actually find people that match up to their DNA. That sounds obvious, but I think, you know, you have to take it at more than just the surface value. The second thing is having that Rolodex. I call it an arsenal.
Yeah.
Like my arsenal is always full and I'm always filling it. So it's filled with companies and startups and entrepreneurs and artists and, you know, culinary talent, et cetera. And I never know how I'm going to connect the dots, but I think there is a certain magic in connecting dots that other people don't see.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely.
That's a skill.
That's a huge skill. You mentioned, I think, something that I think is really, really interesting and really important, and important, especially in the marketing world, is taste. Mm.
Yep.
Taste,
I knew
to me,
you were going to say that.
Because that
I was
is,
thinking you were going to say tastemakers.
But it is tastemakers, but
having
it's also
eye.
Having
yeah.
an eye.
Yeah.
How have you both cultivated the taste?
I gravitate on the technical side a little bit more. I go to MIT Media Lab. I scout talent there.
That's awesome.
I'm always looking for people who are kind of hidden technologists, makers, big, bright minds, and then how you can bring them in to apply solving for a marketing challenge, I think, is kind of magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm always kind of tapping that world the most.
That's yeah, Mel, where
are
you
sourcing
talent?
I recently went to an event at ITP.
Yeah.
And
what's
it was,
ITP?
ITP is the NYU program. That's the intersection of art and technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was a lab type event.
And, yeah.
yeah. And it was really cool. And I went through the whole thing and I was like, this is cool. This is cool. And then at the very end, I had this experience that so moved me on mm-hmm. such an emotional level. And I said to the young woman, I said, you're project is hands down the best thing here. It gave me chills and I will never forget it. And
wow.
she gave me her card and I thought to myself, like, that's someone to keep an eye on because she moved me
right.
emotionally.
What was it?
It was a platform that you stood up on and there was a door, and through the door was this porthole, almost like a ship. And there was a moving image behind the porthole that took you on a journey and made you feel like you were moving. It was almost like a VR experience.
It sounds
but it
like
was
VR, but
tactical,
like lo-fi.
But lo-fi VR, exactly. Yeah. And it was just beautiful. It looked as though Wes Anderson had painted the images. It was just amazing.
So, Lynn, you just put out top 10 agencies to watch.
Yeah.
Curious to know how you filtered them and what reaction you've gotten from the marketplace, because everybody that you had on that list was somebody you needed probably to look up. They weren't a part of the mainstream conversation. It almost looked to me like a scouting report of really cool people doing amazing work that not covered in the traditional trades.
So for 2 years, I've been doing that report twice a year and sending it to kind of my clients or people I'd like to work with, just as sharing knowledge, because I think that's additional value you can offer as a consultant. There's definitely companies in there that I wouldn't recommend for certain projects. And if you read the report, it's pretty direct. It's like, here's what you should hire them for. Here's probably what you shouldn't hire them for. And I don't share it with the companies ahead of time because I feel like they would probably want to edit through it or be like, this isn't what we want to put out into the marketplace. I think people imagine that, you know, even some of these very progressive brands who work, they do the work we love that's always getting great reviews and everybody puts on a pedestal, they still have someone who's literally like, I need a content agency, and goes to Google and is like, content agency.
I was fascinated.
No way.
Yeah, she told me
I've
today.
Seen
I was like,
this.
No.
I
I'm like, you
seen
can't.
This so
you
many
can't
times.
Be kidding
or
me.
Lists of agencies.
Just go on
that
LinkedIn,
like
at least.
A 1,000-person agency, a 20-person agency, and then like a tech company, and they're all getting the same brief. And you're like, no, 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 no. You know, they.
We like hate
Alexa's
the
face.
Like,
is epic.
No idea.
Right now.
Yeah, like I hate
people,
like everything you're saying, I'm like shocked.
Jaw dropping.
I think
and
they
scared.
Just forget. And I think, you know, like I got responses back from a lot of brands that are some of the like most creative brands that wrote to me and were like, oh my gosh, thank you. We don't, you know, we don't know how to find these people.
So one thing that I would love to know is what are the buzzwords right now that clients come in and say, I want, so people will say to me all the time, like,
Lindsay,
I want innovation.
For a long time in my publishing career, it was never been done before, out of the box, make your boss think you're smoking crack kind of idea.
Whoa. Win me an award.
Someone said,
oh,
make your
yeah,
boss
absolutely.
Think you're smoking crack.
Absolutely.
I like that person.
Yeah, totally.
That's
got,
hilarious.
We got briefed once. I don't care if you have to put thousands of people naked in Times Square. Come up with something like that.
You're yeah. like, that's been
that's
done before.
Like, yeah, that's been done before.
That's called Saturday
can
night.
We win a, can we win a
Sunday.
Lion?
We'll talk about it at Sunday dinner, but Sunday, that was Saturday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. That was good.
One of the things that comes up for me a lot is we love the idea, but how can we make sure that people are posting about it? You know, how can we make
posting.
Sure that a hashtag happens? How can we make sure
this is
that
like,
we're getting social media reach?
This is like, on
this
YouTube.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
Yeah.
Keep massaging it.
Well, here's the influencer one. We got 5 people to post and it only cost $350,000 and they only have, you know, reach of XYZ and we got 1%, you know, engagement. I'm like, they're like, that's really good, right? Like,
okay, well, so that brings us to the KPI thing, which yeah. I loved. So Laura and I were talking earlier before you guys came in.
I have something I want to say so bad about this.
The KPI thing?
Yes. Key performance indicator,
KPI Cam. Is a key performance indicator. Are you guys totally changing how they think about, here's how you measure it?
I think sales is coming back to being a KPI. And I think, you know, a lot of digital agencies look at certain agencies that aren't involved in like an actual commercial transaction are like, how the heck, we can freaking do that.
I think you're like, so right about sales.
Let's see about sales, guys. It's not about like.
And I'd like to see people focus more on effectiveness than efficiency.
So my whole thing with efficiency, I don't know if you guys agree, is that it's generally it's a commodity, right? And you said this the other day we were talking. It was like it's a race to the bottom.
Yep.
Meaning anyone can undercut your price on search.
Sure.
On Facebook, right? You're bidding on numbers, programmatic, etc. So what do you get? I mean, I'm not saying that efficiency is an important part of the equation. Efficiency is.
Alexa will
is.
Love this. Data don't vote.
Oh, data.
And what
don't
I mean by
vote.
That, one of the most fascinating things that I have heard in a very long time that came post-election when one of my favorite journalists of all time, Van Jones, went out to Michigan, asked young Democratic community leaders, what happened here? And this young African-American who I need to find him and hug him. He turned around and he said, well, one candidate looked at numbers. The other candidate looked at the conversation. Data don't vote.
Yep.
Somebody didn't show up and somebody made red baseball caps that said, make America great again. Mm-hmm. And tapped into a conversation.
Well,
and I think
tapped into emotion.
Yeah.
Like just raw emotion.
Yeah. And I think as
I know,
for brands
scary,
and entrepreneurs, but if you're looking at it from a marketing case study, let's pulling politics outside.
Yeah.
If you're looking at a marketing case study, I think that there's something really valid there in that we have so many choices. And what does reach and frequency even mean anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And in that regard, what does efficiency buy you? Visibility, numbers? Because if you're not connecting and you're not creating a lasting impact, so what?
Agreed.
So I know we need to wrap up here, but before we let you go, since you both have the magic eye, would love to, Melanie, know what entrepreneur or startup are you obsessing over right now?
Such a great question. There is an artist that I love. She goes by the name of Dear Dana. Have you guys seen her work?
No.
She's amazing. Check her out
but
on
I
Instagram.
Love that. Dear Dana.
She's phenomenal.
What kind of artist?
She's known for her portraits of notable people. She has a Larry David tote bag. She has a Robert De Niro t-shirt. She just has like incredible figures.
I love Larry David tote bag.
Yeah. Who doesn't want that?
Who doesn't?
It's a very grumpy tote bag.
It's perfect. It's really right? Perfect. But she's someone, you know, it's funny. I had seen that tote bag actually at a store in Williamsburg where I live, and I loved it. And I took a photo and I put it on my Instagram. And then years later was introduced to her by a mutual friend and got to visit her studio and showed her that photo from a couple of years ago. And she was so, you know,
grateful.
Yeah, and chuffed. Well, yeah, she was just like, that's so nice. And I told her what a fan I was of her work, but that's real, right? Because I'm right. Here I am showing her, like, I already have given your work some love. And I would love to find ways to work with her. So we're in touch and we're talking about that. But
that's
she's definitely on my mind right now. And she's also a leading voice in this new world of activism that we're all kind of waking up to, and did some really beautiful work around the North Dakota pipeline and other projects. So she's definitely on my radar.
We'll have to check her out
there,
Dana.
That's cool.
Melanie, how can people get in touch with you if they want to talk to you about entrepreneurs and startups or
my
startups and entrepreneurs want to
talk to
you?
My Twitter and Instagram is Melwire, M-E-L-Wire. That's an homage to the show The Wire.
Nice.
Which I came to the party 10 years late on and was obsessed. And I wouldn't stop talking about it for like a week.
So get at me. Yeah.
And Lindsay, you've been scoping some of the biggest brands in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing it right now? Who is a brand that you're just like, they get it? Could be somebody you're working with, not working with, mm-hmm. but somebody that you think is going to really catch people by surprise in 2017.
Who's doing it well? I work with Target. And if you know me, you know they're like near and dear to my heart. And they always work with the best partners. But what I think they're doing really well is they have an agency relationship group that is really there just to make the agencies understand the brand, break down silos, get to understand what's happening in other pieces of the business and connect the dots and make sure they have kind of like a counseling place to go to and someone to talk to. And I think you'll see sort of procurement become that a little bit more. So I think they're a leader in that space. I'm super interested in working with, we're about to work with one, but knock on wood, energy companies this year. I think that they can really start to, and it's really those stodgier brands or industries and energy.
There's a ton of opportunity.
So much potential to start tapping the creative world in new ways and become a little bit more mainstream and cross over into culture and get people behind them. And so I really hope that our, you know, they'll kind of come over to the advertising world that we all know and start tapping companies.
I'm really
companies
excited
like us.
For the stodgy brands. It sounds weird, but like,
that's where
it's like everything old is new again. And I think a lot of these companies who have been doing it the same way for so many years are getting a new injection of talent. And a lot of that talent is coming from the agency world.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that is coming new ideas, new perspective, new process and new ways of doing things. And I think they're like, this shit needs to be disrupted. Like, I can't believe we're still putting out clip art of the guy in the tie in the backyard with his golden retriever.
And that's the fun kind of challenge you get, right? Those are the fun companies to work with.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But I also think they're like innovating in their products. Like,
energy
is like a crazy innovative space.
And the partnerships.
Right.
We talk about this
so it's a complicated story to tell. And
totally.
I think once people understand it, it's just such ripe territory for us to really lend all of our skills to.
And how can people find you?
My website is the easiest. I think Sunday Dinner, not hard to forget.
It's a great name.
Yeah. Well, this has been an amazing conversation.
Thanks
with
so
two
much.
Badass women.
Thanks for coming.
Lindsay
by.
Slaby, Melanie Altrescu.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks
and
for coming.
Check out these ladies. They are on fire.
So that's it. Episode number 2 in the books, and I want to thank Melanie Altrescu and Lindsay Slaby for coming by and having a good conversation. They have so much to say that I feel like we need to have them back on the show because there's so much more that I want to drill into them.
And their
drill into them.
That's
anyway,
a different show.
That's a great time to say we're out for this week of Adlandia.
Please subscribe, leave us a review, a comment. You can find us on Adlandia Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
All the usual suspects.
And a special thank you to
our producer, Cameron Drews, who you can also find on Twitter and maybe, I don't know.
Swipe left.
Tinder and other places.
Thanks, Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers. We'll be back. We hope you had fun this week in Atlantia. Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.